Episode 15 of Coffee with Prime. I am Lewis.
And I'm Alexi.
I am so excited about the coffee I have for you today. So this is crazy. Last week, we haven't even drank our coffee yet.
I know. I don't know why. I'm laughing.
So this is crazy because the coffee that we have in our studio right now, brewed and ready to drink, is from the soliciting email that I sent to the company. I sent a week ago. So think about, in a week's time, they roasted it in Portland, Oregon. They shipped it,
whoa,
got it in our hands, and it was roasted on the 20th. Today is the 25th
today? I think it's the
24th. It's the 24th.
That's crazy.
It is really crazy.
So they roasted it on the 20th and we got it already?
This is just the beginning. This is such an incredible...
And we got it yesterday, so we really got it in like 3 days.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
The coffee roaster that we are tasting today is called Kova. It's spelled C-O-A-V-A, but it's pronounced Kova. Their website is kovacoffee.com, and I sent an email to them like I do to a lot of different roasters. Some people get back to me, some people don't, but they sent one back to me right away this 7 days ago, Sunday night, and a really cool guy named Ben Anderson said, "Hey, Lewis, we would love to send coffee to you and your co-host." He made me a custom coupon code for $40 worth of coffee from their online store.
Whoa.
So whereas a lot of coffee companies just say, hey, let us know what you want, and then they invoice it to themselves in-house, and then they send it to us. He actually made me, feel like a real customer, being able to go and the discount code he made me was Coffee with Crime.
Oh my gosh!
So it's like he just made a I don't know.
That's really cool.
So their website development game is on point. I don't know how they're doing it, but that's just one of many things that Kova is doing is completely nailing. Before I go on, I've got a lot to talk about with this, but I just wanted us to try. First of all, let's try the Benjamin Miranda coffee from the Honduras. Let's see, this one is...
I like how you said that.
Yours, and this one is mine. So cheers. This one is from the Honduras.
Okay.
This is our first time trying
Honduran
coffee.
I was just going to say, I don't
Honduran
think we've
coffee.
Had one of these before.
Yep. So here we go.
All right. Yeah.
That's good.
It's very
straight
smooth.
Candy.
It's really good. Does it have tasting notes on there?
It does.
Let me go
for it. Broom, drum roll. This is the part where Alexi, with no hints at all, tries to taste, do a cupping, and guess the tasting notes. She's thinking. Her eyes are going this way and that.
This is really hard. it's good.
It's sweet and it's smooth. So what's sweet?
I want to say it has some kind of like a berry flavor.
Not exactly.
Dang it.
So the tasting notes on this one are plum. Is that a berry? I thought it was a fruit.
It's the same thing.
Okay, you're right.
Yes.
And caramel and honeysuckle.
Caramel, okay.
I can actually taste caramel
in
here.
In fact, that too.
As I taste this coffee, and we've tried a lot of coffees on this show with a lot of different, sometimes very exotic tasting notes. But when I first tasted this, my initial thought was that it tastes as close to the tasting notes that of any coffee I've ever had. Like a lot of times I'll taste like one out of three or two out of three, but I can actually taste the fruity plum and the sweetness of the caramel, and also like this kind of honey.
I can definitely
taste
crazy, the caramel
but
too.
It's really, really good.
I think
that a plum is
considered a berry.
I'm not going to argue with you on that because like I'm not
fruit
expert.
I knew it was some kind of a fruit.
Yeah.
So,
well, coffee's a fruit. I mean, it comes from a fruit.
That's
so what an incredible coffee.
It's really good.
This is named after the man in the Honduras who is the who kind of runs the farm. Well, let me back up a little bit because I want to do a little bit more laying the foundation for this. So in 2008, Matt Higgins was a veteran barista living in North Portland, and he started roasting in his garage. He kept the roaster afloat in the early days by repairing motorcycles. And it's just so cool. Like every roaster just has such a different story, and that, and motorcycles are part of this story. let's see. From the beginning of the roasting, it's been very important for Matt and for Kova to have a really close relationship with the people at the source of the coffee. In other words, the farmers and the people working on the farm. So right at the beginning of this, Matt Higgins from Portland started studying agriculture, farm practices, and sustainable business models. He focused on undersourced regions, which means regions that are not necessarily famous for cranking out coffee all the time. Like you see a lot of Ethiopia,
right?
See a lot of Guatemala, Colombia, Papua New Guinea, but I rarely see Honduran coffees around, and which is why when I went with my little coffee with Prime discount code to the online store, that grabbed my eye right away. They had several different coffees, but I was like, that's really interesting. I would love to try a Honduran coffee, and because of the amount of money they gave me with my little discount code, I was able to grab two of them. So we're tasting two different coffees today. This first one is the
Both from Honduras.
They are. Yep.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And let's see, what else was I going to say here? They roast twice a week on Monday. Well, anyway, they roast twice a week, and whenever orders come in, as the next roast date that after that order, they not only roast but they ship it that day, which is why we have this coffee all the way from Portland in the Midwest 4 days afterwards, and we've already had it a couple days, so it's
That's
really
so crazy,
really incredible. Yeah. It's one thing to say that on your website, but when it actually is executed so well and with such friendly comfort customer service, thank you, Ben, appreciate you. It's a big deal. Really, really neat. Let's see. Just a couple little blips from the website. I did want to say about the website, I've never seen so much concise but still comprehensive information about the whole roasting process from the ground with the coffee tree growing from 3 to 5 years until it's ready to... It's mature.
Yeah.
Up until... the roaster and what kind of roaster and what they talked about invective heat and getting it into the cup of the people in the cafe. I would say of all the websites I've seen of any roaster, if someone wants to see like the whole process very concisely, but fully explained, I would go to coavacoffee.com and go to where it says, like the process or something like that. And it just guides you through the whole thing. It's a really neat educational thing about coffee. Again, like I'm looking at this stuff all the time, especially since we're doing this website, but to see it all in the same place is very impressive. Not every roaster does that. So it's really, I mean, on their website, they've put a lot of intentionality into everything. And so it was really fun to, I kind of got lost in it for a while, which was fun. Kova's hard work and willingness to go above and beyond has earned them a reputation with coffee farmers as respectful, diligent, and honest. So they're not just kind of flying in saying, hey, where can we get the cheapest coffee? And then like flying back. They're developing relationships. They're having conversations about what methods produce the best coffee so that we can sell more stateside and so that we can give you more business.
And they're naming their coffees after
it's
their
really cool
farmers.
After the farmers.
I like
it's,
that.
It's awesome. It's really, really neat. All coffees are hand-picked, which means the beans only come from perfectly ripe cherries, which develop sugars, which produce naturally sweet and complex coffee. So if you have a machine doing this, the machine doesn't necessarily know what a ripe or an unripe berry is. And you just, I mean, it's amazing. If you have one bad bean in a batch of coffee that you grind, it's just like one bad apple ruins it. It'll add either a too sour or too bitter flavor notes to your cup of coffee. So, I mean, every bean really does matter.
It's amazing how much work goes into coffee. Oh,
I mean, yeah. And like, and people look at will look at the price of a coffee like this and say like, oh, I can't afford that. And it's like, I get that. Not everyone can afford to pay 15 or 20 bucks for a 12-ounce bag, but...
But so much goes into it and it's so good.
Yeah. I mean, there is...
It's high quality.
The quality difference is really stunning with a coffee like this. And so, yeah, handpicked and you're... sending business back to the Honduras. 10 additional quality gates and phases between the source country and the Portland roastery happen to just filter out anything that might reduce, detract from the quality, just a lot of different processes that they have in place. I don't really have time to go into all that stuff, but needless to say, when you drink the coffee, you're like, okay, this is really good. Like someone, this doesn't like I always say on this podcast, good coffee cannot happen by accident. You have to avoid a million different pitfalls of accidentally doing this or accidentally letting this happen or letting it dry to one too many days or letting it, you know, not picking it when it's exactly ripe. I mean, there's so many things that when you actually drink a cup of coffee this good, you really appreciate it because a lot of people worked very hard to make it. Kova offers free shipping for all subscriptions as well as free shipping on all other orders of $30 or more. Let's take a little intermission and taste the other coffee. This is called Familia Mancilla, again named after the Mancilla family in the same region of Honduras as the other one.
Oh, it's Do they know each other?
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah. I looked on Google Maps. It's a place called Santa Barbara, Honduras, and it's a village. It's not a huge metropolis.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that they're familiar with each other. And so this coffee that we're about to drink is the what does it say, Mancilla? Is one of their oldest producer relationships. So this is one of the first back when Kova started roasting and started going to different source countries and meeting people and developing relationships. This was one of the first ones. David, because he's he's a Spanish speaking person. David Mancilla is the owner of that one. And so let's give it a taste.
All
here.
Right,
here we go. The Familia Mancilla. Also so good. I just love this stuff. So tell me what you're tasting. I'm looking at the bag right now. This very well-presented half orange, half cream-colored bag of Kova coffee. I'm looking at the tasting notes. What do you think? Just don't think too hard. Just kind of go for it.
Citrus.
I'm not getting any citrus when I drink it. Now, the coffee does...
like nuts, some kind of nuts.
Amaretto, good job.
Yes, is that a nut?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm going to be very embarrassed if it's not.
I guess I have no idea what an amaretto is.
I think it's a nut.
Okay.
The amaretto nut? I don't know. Yeah. This isn't one of those podcasts where we sit around for 5 minutes and Google things to make sure I've said so much wrong information.
I'm sure I have too.
But I usually try to correct it on the next episode. But it's tasting notes for Familia Mancilla are amaretto, cherry pie, and vanilla wafer.
Cherry pie.
Yeah, and I can taste. I get that out of coffees here and there. This cherry kind of sweetness, which amaretto goes very well with, obviously. And isn't it interesting, though, that two coffees from almost the same place.
Right.
I mean, really, the exact same place in the context of the world. In the same village,
they're both
complexity.
Really good.
They are.
Complexity. That's a good word. They're both complex.
Mm-hmm. They are, which is why it's hard to guess the notes. But again, with this one, I mean, as I was tasting it, I can really pick out even the vanilla, like it's subtle, but I can taste that. And so I think these have been cupped very, very well with, you know, I mean, sometimes you see stuff on tasting notes. It's kind of like, where did they come up with like,
gingerbread like houses.
Gingerbread persimmon. but no, I taste it all in there and it's just clean. It's smooth. It's sweet. No bitterness, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
So, this one is from the Mancia estate or, you know, family in Santa Barbara. It says these coffees are all depulped, fermented, and washed on site before being transferred to the mill an hour away for patio drying. Again, patio as you drying. Might expect on the website, there's a picture of the farmers. This is David Mancia right there.
Aww.
So he is literally the guy.
That's really cool.
A very high res picture of this of this farmer with the beautiful Honduran landscape behind him.
Aww.
And then this is a picture of Benjamin,
oh, wow.
who is the farmer with the other coffee. So yeah,
I like his hat.
Yeah, it's an awesome hat. And then it shows you, you know, with this rundown, the story of the coffee. It shows you on a map of Central America where Santa Barbara is. You can see right away where the coffee is coming from in the world.
Wow. That's and really cool.
I mean, with this really cool like cartoon style, like animation style picture of the farmer. I mean, it's. This whole website is just really, really enjoyable to browse around.
Yeah, that's a good picture.
Yeah, it is. Same thing over here for him.
Those are
so
beautiful. Yeah, it looks like wherever they are is like really
very, very good presentation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So awesome coffees. Kova has won numerous awards and recognition on a local, regional, and national level for their coffee, including praise from no less than Jerry Seinfeld.
Whoa.
Who went there with a Fred Armisen.
What's the deal with coffee?
Exactly. Of Portlandia fame for an episode of his Netflix Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, in which Seinfeld said after tasting a cup that Kova's coffee was a reason to live here.
Whoa. And I thought you were going to say a reason to live.
Well, that's... Not quite that, yeah, but yeah. Apparently,
wow.
for a brief moment, Jerry Seinfeld might have considered leaving New York City to live in Portland for just because of Kova's coffee. And lastly, before we get to the crime, I know I'm going on and on about this, but this is
all super interesting. I like hearing this.
Ben also sent us these stickers.
I love when they send us stickers.
Yes, they sent us stickers. I'm putting one on my computer. It's got the coffee flower, which is a white flower, and
that's
then the berries.
That's really cool.
And it's kind of like a tattoo style of font.
Yeah, that's
really
cute.
But yeah, we've got three stickers. So, finally, in late 2020, Hurricane Eta, which is a category 4 hurricane, hit places in Central America as well as the Honduras, and many people there lost their homes. There was about $5 billion worth of economic loss. I don't know how recent the statistic I saw, but as of the time of the article was written that I read, there had been 74 people that lost their lives. Families were, you know, really devastated by this in the Honduras. And what I didn't know when I ordered these on the website was that Kova has this thing, have three Honduran coffees that are called their Honduras Relief Trio. And 100% of the sales from those coffees are given back to the farmers for the purpose of rebuilding and relief.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was really, really awesome. And I was so impressed by that right before our podcast started, I actually paid for 2 more pounds of Honduran coffee.
That's so
So they'll be sending those. And I thought in the spirit of giving, why don't we donate one of those to one of our listeners?
Yeah.
So I thought maybe, we haven't even discussed this at all, but I thought maybe...
this is fun.
Tell a friend about the podcast, about this episode, because we want to spread the word about this. And whether it's on Facebook, if it's on Facebook, just make sure you tag us and then tag your friend and say, hey, Sarah, I think you'd enjoy this episode. Or we understand that not everyone is on all these social media things. So we will trust you if you just like email us and say, hey, I recommended Coffee with Crime to a friend. So everyone who tells their friends about this episode, we are going to put them in a hat. And next episode, we're going to take out a name and we're going to send someone a wonderful, awesome Kova coffee, which goes to help the restoration process from the hurricane in Honduras. So
I love this idea.
Yeah, so we're going to do that. My email is lewiskNudsen podcast@gmail.com. So that's the one we'll use for if you are not on Facebook or anything, and you can just say, hey, I told my friend about this. Please put my name in the hat. And so
we or if you like see us somewhere and you just want to tell us.
That's true.
Person.
Yeah. We have some listeners who live in town here. So suffice it to say, I'm just super impressed with this company. I see a lot of roasters all the time. And it's not like I'm some sort of like famous critic or anything, but it's just like I see a lot.
Yeah.
And obviously there are things that roasters are doing right sometimes, but sometimes there's things that I notice they don't seem to be quite there. A lot of times I just want more information on the website. Like I want to know like what's the story behind this. And sometimes the coffee is amazing, but you just don't know what the story is. And this, it like, again, just as with coffee, also with a small business, there are a lot of ways to get it wrong. And it takes a lot of hard work and focus and trial and error to get it right. Mm-hmm. And when I see what this company is doing in every way, whether it be ethically or quality wise, they're just getting everything right. And it's really impressive. And I think people should go and buy their coffee.
Yeah. So, I agree.
Yeah.
It's really,
so thank
really
you,
good.
Ben. Thank you, Matt, and the whole team at Kova. This is just really good stuff. And I'm going to continue to sip on it and get very caffeinated as I listen to you talk about our crime for today. So
wow. Well, yeah, thank you so much for doing all that research.
Of course.
And thank you to Kova.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, it's really cool to have that kind of that, like almost like personal connection.
Yeah.
You know, like we're looking right now at this farmer
yeah.
picture of him, and it's like he grew this coffee.
Yeah.
You know.
So. Well, and I'm glad that reminded me, because both of these farms are only about 4 or 5 acres
oh, wow.
each.
Wow.
Which
yeah.
we live in the Midwest. We live with these massive corn mm-hmm. fields and soybean fields. And that is a very small
yeah.
amount. But just like the roasting in small batches renders a kind of quality that you don't get with, you know, giant roasters and just automated processes. Just the same on the farm side of things. When you're hand picking, when it's a small farm, when you're really like every bean is, you know, is like important.
Right.
There's every tree, every coffee tree is important. Like this is a small business on the Honduran side and on the U.S. side.
Yeah.
And I just. Not just with coffee, but I mean with every area. What am I trying to say? Like every product that I have come across, I've noticed this, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, where things done by hand or in smaller contexts usually render more quality, more mm-hmm. personality, more just taste.
Yeah.
So yeah, not only on the roasting side, but then even on the, you know, right in the farm, like a 4-acre farm. I mean, that's small,
yeah.
but it's every bean is used, every mm-hmm. bean is right, you know, before it goes into the bag, and you can really tell.
Yeah. Well, cool.
well, so that was that.
I feel like there's like a lot of pressure on me for this crime because everybody's going to be telling their friends about it. So I'm a little nervous.
You'll do fine.
Oh my gosh.
Just keep drinking that coffee.
I need to get this. Sorry. All my electronics are crap. So.
Yeah, we'll have to get some new electronics.
Hang on one sec. Also, I want to mention how handsome you look today.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you're all as beautiful as always.
No. But seriously, though, like your hair looks great. Your outfit is on point.
We're not supposed to talk about this on the show.
I'm sorry.
Don't apologize.
I can't help myself.
Okay.
All right. So we'll get started here. Okay. So today we're going to be talking about Diana Lovejoy.
Wow, what a name for a... Well, I don't know what she's done yet.
I don't know anything about her. This woman. So Diana was born in 1973 and grew up in Mountain View, California, which is northern California near San Jose,
okay.
you know, south of San Francisco and,
yep.
you know, that whole area.
She was born, you said, in 74?
73. Yes. Okay. So she grew up in a loving family. She did well in school. And from an early age, she showed exceptional talent in both music and sports.
You said they were a loving family, but were they a joyful family?
I think they were a loving and joyful family.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. You may proceed.
Thank you. So when she got to high school, she competed in swimming, track, cross country, and she began to take an interest in writing as well. So she graduated in 1990 from Mountain View High School and went on to study at the University of California in San Diego, where she focused on literature, psychology, French, and music.
Cool. Wow.
So she was, you know, she had a lot of interests, you know. So after graduation, she immediately landed a job as a documentation specialist for Nokia.
No.
So this
my
is
first
the,
cell phone was
yeah,
Nokia.
Yeah, yeah. Mine right? was too, I think. Yeah, this is mid-90s. You know,
okay,
cell phones
perfect,
are starting to, you know, really get out there. So yeah, so she's got this great job. So, you know, basically she's killing it at life. She's killing it.
Is that an intentional choice of words?
I don't know. So she stayed with Nokia until 1999 when she accepted a high-paying job at a software company as a technical writer.
Wow.
So she's just, you know, moving on up.
Seriously.
She's got a great, great thing going. So Diana, she had a very full life. She was making good money. She's living in San Diego, and she continued to be very active. She did triathlons. She loved to travel. She had a lot of friends, and they described her as adventurous, very sweet, very loving, and a little bit awkward.
Can I say something? Can I interject?
Yeah.
This podcast is called Coffee with Crime, not Coffee with Happy, Successful People. Or am
Things
I just speaking too soon?
Just got better. Diana had it all until things just got better. Well, keep listening,
Hallmark.
Okay?
We
just
Sorry,
started.
I'm being impatient,
so, yeah. So, you know, she had this great life, although she felt her life was not complete because she always wanted to get married and have a family. So in 2005, at age 32, she decides to try online dating. So 2005, I feel like that's kind of when online dating was starting to kind of get up and running. That sounds about right.
Really?
I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Why? What do you think?
I don't have any knowledge.
You have no knowledge.
I don't.
I mean, I
as
think,
far as when it was getting up
I
and running.
I think that's when like eHarmony came
okay,
out.
Yep. And the commercials were on TV.
Sure. Yeah. With that guy, that eHarmony guy.
Yeah.
You're ma, ma, ma. I can't remember what he used to say.
His voice would creep in on people's dates.
Oh, yeah.
On their failed dates. But he didn't realize that he looks creepy himself.
Yeah.
Anyway, too bad. He's the owner. He can do what he wants.
Yeah, he can. So she goes online to an online dating site. I don't know which site. You know, I don't know if it was Match.com, eHarmony, OkCupid.
Plenty of fish,
Christian Mingle,
yep.
J-Date.
So many.
I don't know.
Farmers Only.
Yeah. But she quickly meets a man named Greg Mulvihill. So the couple had a lot in common. So they both had great jobs in the tech industry. Greg was a computer programmer. They both loved the outdoors, traveling, and they wanted the same things in life. So they both wanted to get married. They wanted to have kids, et cetera.
Still sounds like a Hallmark movie.
Things are still going great. So the two quickly became inseparable. They fall in love. And after 2 years of dating, they get married in 2007.
Wonderful.
So they have
this has been coffee.
They have a beautiful wedding. They go to Costa Rica for their honeymoon.
Wow. Sure, yeah.
And they end up buying a nice home together in Carlsbad, California, which is a beautiful upper class area.
It's like things can't go wrong for this woman.
No, I mean, things just keep getting better. Until, all right. So Diana and Greg, they're now both in their mid-30s, and they're eager to start a family right away. Although that proved difficult, and over the next couple of years, Diana ended up having 8 miscarriages.
Wow.
So, you know, it's a tough time for them. And to complicate things further, in 2010, Diana began being overwhelmed by fatigue and muscle pain and was diagnosed with fibromyalgia later that year.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know a whole lot about fibromyalgia. I know it's a terrible illness.
Well,
there's no cure for it.
That's one of the reasons that no one knows a lot about
right,
it.
Right, yeah.
I have a friend whose wife had it, and it's an extreme amount of pain and mm-hmm. sleeplessness. I mean, and it and it's like this shifting thing where it's different for everyone. But
right.
I mean, but it's really hard to pin down
yeah.
what causes it. And yeah.
Right.
So that's rough.
Yeah. And like I said, there's no cure for it. Like they can give you some like medications to treat
different
it.
Different things
but
have worked for different people.
Right.
But there's no set like take this and you'll be better.
Yeah.
Like there's none as far as
right.
Kind of
like a trial and error
yeah.
type thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going to work became a struggle for her, and eventually she had to quit her job just because she was just exhausted all the time and in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff also caused her to get very depressed. So she was someone who was, you know, she loved her job, she was really active, and all of a sudden, you know, she really can't do any of these things. But her and her husband, Greg, were determined to overcome it, and, you know, they still wanted to have a family and all of this. So with Diana being out of work, she starts to focus more on fitness, and that kind of is a way for her to overcome the pain. Mm-hmm. So she starts a fitness blog and a YouTube channel.
Oh, wow.
And she, you know, where she gives like fitness tips and everything. And then she also does this cooking show on YouTube.
Okay. Is it famous or is it?
No, okay. Definitely not. So I went on YouTube and I actually watched it, and it's just so awkward.
Okay, yeah.
Like just like really like cringy, just like, I felt so embarrassed for this woman. You should watch it.
Yeah. I want to now. Yeah. So, what's the channel called?
I just looked up, Diana Lovejoy cooking.
Okay. And then
show
found,
or whatever. Yeah. So eventually she ends up starting to take this new drug that ends up helping her a lot.
Hmm. Do you know what it was?
I didn't write the name
okay.
down. It's some, you know, obviously long pharmaceutical
okay,
name.
Yeah.
It was used to treat like some kind of chest infection, but for some reason she
yeah,
was it like worked
works,
for
right?
her.
Yeah.
yeah. So this, you know, allows her to be more active and start feeling better. So the couple starts to be able to take vacations again and kind of do live their active lifestyle like they were doing before. So, and things really start to look up in the beginning of 2012 when Diana finds out that she's pregnant, and then they have a baby
and
boy.
She goes, oh, she carried
in
okay.
September of 2012.
Wow.
So yeah, so
it just sounds like
things are going back up again, you know. And although they both loved their son dearly, after he was born, the couple began to drift apart. So one major source of contention for the couple was the fact that Diana was convinced that their son had fibromyalgia as well as some kind of a kidney disease. And although there was no evidence that he was sick, you know, she was very, you know, she wanted to get him tested and take
yeah.
him to doctors and give him different treatments and medications. And Greg started to view this as some kind of like Munchausen syndrome.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to
yeah.
say.
You know, he felt like she was putting their son
can
through a lot of...
Can you explain for people that don't know what Munchausen's is?
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was till I met you.
Oh, really?
And now I have a thorough encyclopedic knowledge
love,
of it.
I don't love Munchausen syndrome,
no,
but I'm very interested.
It's a fascinating and unique condition.
So,
yeah.
So Munchausen syndrome is actually... And I feel like we've talked about this before, but maybe not. So it's basically... Munchausen syndrome is when you think that... Basically, you either think there's something wrong with you, or you like, you know, you seek out treatments for ailments that you don't have.
Okay.
But then Munchausen syndrome by proxy is when you do it to somebody else.
Right.
So if you have a child or you're taking care of, you know, a sick relative or something, and you're taking them to the doctor, or you're giving them medications, or you're like basically making them sick
so that you can have the feeling of healing.
Exactly.
Then.
So yeah. you can get, you know, attention. Some people do it for financial gain.
Yeah.
Some people just because they're nutty and they...
Well, I think there's a weird... the way I look at it, there's a very misguided... There's a kernel of sincerity in it because you want to help someone. But the twisted thing about it is that you're
yeah.
hurting them so that you can help them. You're not
right.
like a doctor where someone comes to you and they are sick and you heal them. But you make your, in many cases, child or
right.
loved one sick so that you can heal
yeah.
them. So there's this, okay, it's nice to want someone to be healed, but it's you shouldn't be on cusp.
I think that in some cases it can be like where they're not quite there and they think that they are helping, but mm-hmm. I think in other cases they're doing it to like just for their own gain. Thing, so yeah, it's a very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Disease or whatever you want to call it.
Okay, so she's displaying some tendencies of that,
right?
In like, because I assume that the doctors were saying no, there's nothing wrong. The test came back negative.
Yeah,
and she's like going for second and third opinions,
right? And she's like doing a lot of her own research right. on this and everything.
Because the internet's around now,
right?
So a lot of our crimes are old, but she definitely has the internet.
Yeah, but this is 2012, 2013 at this point. So yeah, the right. internet is, you know,
yeah.
WebMD, you got Google.
It's funny. It took me a long time to think to Google things. Did that ever occur to you on your own, or were you a quick adapter to Googling, like what's the capital of whatever? Or
I think it became easier once I had like an actual smartphone.
Right.
But I don't remember like the day that I decided like I could Google.
No, it wasn't a day for me either. But I would just there was like a period of maybe a year or two where someone was like, yeah, I just Googled it.
Yeah.
And I would be like, oh yeah, I should have done that like with something else. And it just took me a while to implement the fact that I can, even when I had my phone, I was very slow to, because a lot of the stuff as a musician, a lot of the stuff I work on, I mean, the answer is there.
Right.
It's either on YouTube or just a Google search away on a forum or something. But I would just like do a lot of trial and error, and then I would realize like, why am I doing this? I need to just Google it. And of course, now, just like everyone, I do it all the time, but it took me a while to kind of appropriate that into my
I think
workflow.
It's like sometimes kind of fun to try to figure it out old school.
That's true. Sometimes you learn better by not just getting the answer right away. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, so she was doing her own research.
So, you know, he was concerned. He thought, you know, she was putting their son through, you know, unnecessary stuff. So basically their communication starts to suffer. They're not seeing eye to eye on this.
Yeah.
And around this time, Greg injured his shoulder and he could not work.
Oh, wow.
So I'm not sure exactly what his shoulder injury was or if he had to have surgery or something, but he was out of work. So on top of everything else, now they're having a lot of financial issues.
Right.
So Diana ends up getting a job doing sales.
Okay.
And she starts focusing on her online fitness blog and her creepy robotic cooking videos. But things are not improving in the marriage and the couple ends up trying counseling and that doesn't really help. So this goes on for the next few years until the summer of 2014, when Diana files a police report saying that Greg was abusing her and their son and files a restraining order against him. Whoa. So all of a sudden, kind of out of the blue, she's just like, he's abusive. I want him out of the house. So Greg ends up moving out, obviously.
Wow.
And the couple begins divorce proceedings.
Yep.
So police do a thorough investigation on the abuse allegations, and they end up discovering that there is no evidence that Greg has ever been abusive to her or to their son.
Okay.
So it's just kind of, you know, that gets thrown out, charges get dropped because, you know, they're like, this isn't real.
Yeah.
And Greg and Diana soon find themselves in a bitter custody battle. Over their son, with both parents wanting full custody of him.
Wow.
So they end up, you know, getting a, you know, whatever you call it, settlement by the court that tells them that they have to split custody. So now they have 50-50 custody.
Okay.
And Diana gets to keep the house, although the judge orders her to pay Greg half the money that their house is worth. So she has to pay Greg $120,000.
Wow.
And she's not happy about it.
No.
I mean, that would be a, you know, that's a large sum of money to just have to pay somebody.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going about their separate ways. You know, they're splitting up. They're getting everything kind of worked out with custody and the financial stuff. And,
right.
You know. So on the evening of September 1st, 2016... Greg gets a call from an unknown number, and the man on the phone says that he is a private investigator and he has information about Greg's estranged wife at this point that will help him in future divorce proceedings and in their custody arrangements. And he wants him to meet him later that night in a wooded area off this desolate road.
Note to our listeners, never, never do. I don't even know what the end of the story is, but if anyone ever calls you with any sort of like, meet me on a desolate road, yeah, just don't go.
Yeah, don't
we
do it.
We do not. We here at Coffee with Crime do not.
So yeah, so he wants him to come here to this location to collect a package of information. And the thing is, too, it's like...
X-Files.
I don't think private investigators typically call random people because they took an interest in their divorce
I mean, you cases. Would know you're a private investigator.
Yeah. So yeah, the whole thing is just not legit at all. So yeah. But so Greg does think this is odd. But he's like really curious about it. You know, he's like, what does this guy have on my ex-wife?
Yeah.
You know, I want to get my hands on that.
Sure. He was overcome by kind of like that.
Yeah.
Lust for maybe a little revenge. Yeah. And righting the situation.
He's like, if I can find out something really juicy on her, maybe I can like, you know, really like stick it to her in the court. I don't know.
Boy. What's about to happen, I can't even imagine.
So Greg decides to play it somewhat safe and bring his friend Jason Kovach along to meet
that's smart.
The PI.
Yeah.
So, you know, they go at 10 p.m. to the woods to meet this guy.
The woods.
And they brought with them a flashlight and a small baseball bat, you know, just in case things got crazy.
So he wasn't totally naive. He realized that there was some kind of possible danger.
Exactly. Exactly.
No firearm, though.
No, maybe he didn't have one.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming, it's California. So he and his friend were walking around in the woods with the flashlight and looking for this package. And at one point, Greg shines his flashlight in the bushes and sees someone hiding in the bushes pointing a rifle at him.
God, that's creepy.
Yeah. So he screams, gun! And he and his friend take off running.
Yeah.
So the person fires several shots and one hits Greg in the chest.
Whoa.
Yeah.
While he's running?
Well, as he is turning away from him.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It hits him in the chest.
Wow.
So then the person in the bushes gets up and runs off in the opposite direction. Yeah. So Greg's friend Jason calls 911 and tells them that his friend is shot. The police come and they start... you know, investigating the area. And because it's in such a desolate location, one of the police officers actually puts Greg in his police car and drives him to the hospital himself because he's like, I don't even know if an ambulance is going to be able to find us in time.
Yep.
So Greg is rushed into emergency surgery to try to save his life. And then he is placed on life support.
Wow.
So things are not looking great for him at this point. So the police start investigating the scene, and they find some things at the scene that are a little interesting. So they find an Angry Birds beach towel.
Sorry.
What's so funny about this?
I don't know.
You think Angry Birds are funny?
No.
So they find this Angry Birds beach towel, and it's folded up and, on the ground.
Okay.
So it's kind of weird.
That is weird. Any Pokemon paraphernalia? Maybe someone's just trying to...
No, but if you thought that was funny, you're really going to love what's coming next. So next to the beach towel, they find a huge steaming pile of DNA evidence.
Like dung? Human feces?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, weird.
And then next to the pile of poop, they find another towel with more poop on it.
What?
Yeah, like someone like wiped their butt with this other towel.
Why? Why would you do that? I have so many questions.
Just I have so many questions, and I know what happens, but. Right. So they collect it, of course, because it contains DNA of, you know, someone. So in the meantime, they learn from Greg's friend, Jason, about the problems with Greg's wife. And although they don't immediately suspect her, they go to her house at 3 o'clock in the morning to let her know, hey, your, you know, estranged husband has been shot.
Yeah.
And they kind of want to ask her, some questions about it, you know. So she tells him that she had been at home all night and she was acting strange when they talked to her. She was laughing about him getting shot and just being kind of weird, which is, you know, never a good sign.
Yeah.
So the next evening, Greg actually wakes up from his unconsciousness.
Yeah.
And the bullet had actually missed his heart by just like hair.
What was it, a 22 or?
It was a rifle. I'm not sure what kind.
Okay.
It was.
It wasn't a shotgun though, so it was just one
right
bullet.
Okay. So he's awake, he's alert, and he's able to recount the details from the night before.
Wow.
So, you know, they're asking him questions. Do you have any idea who could have done this? And he says he has no idea who would have wanted to do this to him. You know, he doesn't have any enemies. Like, he's, you know, he has no clue. However, he does tell the police about the phone call that he received, mm-hmm. about the person wanting him to meet them, you know, in the woods.
Right.
So they discover that the number is from a burner phone, which, you know, is a pay-as-you-go phone.
Yeah, which is hard to trace.
Right. It can't be traced. However, they are able to find out through the carrier that it was purchased at a Best Buy.
Right.
So they go to the Best Buy, and the manager of the Best Buy shows them the footage of the time it was purchased.
Hmm.
And they see a woman walking into the Best Buy with a pretty pink top on and her blonde hair in a ponytail. And guess who it is?
I think it's Lovejoy.
It's Lovejoy. It's Diana Lovejoy.
Did she have an Angry Birds towel like wrapped around her with some poop? That was later, I guess.
Oh, yeah. That would have been, yeah. Man.
So, okay. So that's a smoking gun right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they arrest her and they bring her in for an interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
So at first she's like, she denies any involvement in this. But then they confront her with the video evidence.
Right.
And then she starts telling them a different story.
Yep.
So she starts to tell them the story of Weldon McDavid Jr.
Made up. I'll tell you right now.
So Weldon McDavid Jr. is actually a real person. and he had appeared on an episode of Dateline in 2013. So this was a couple years before this happened. So he was on an episode about a woman who had taken shooting lessons from him because she was concerned about her abusive husband, like, attacking her.
Yeah.
So he basically was talking about how he had helped her learn how to protect herself against her abusive husband. And since then, he had become kind of a local celebrity and hero and took an interest in teaching women how to defend themselves.
Hmm.
From, you know, abusive situations. So he did one-on-one classes with them and he made like all these self-defense videos. So yeah, people, you know, kind of admired that he sort of like was helping women.
Sure.
So she tells the police that she started taking shooting lessons from him because she was afraid that Greg was going to like come and attack her.
Okay.
So she said that while she was taking shooting lessons from him, they kind of started to have like romantic involvement. And then Weldon had come up with a plan where he told her that he wanted to lure Greg into the woods and then scare him, not kill him.
Because Weldon doesn't have anything better to do but to scare grown men on September 1st of 2016.
That's right.
In the woods.
And what's even kind of weirder is that Diana gives him $1,000 to scare her husband. So he's like, I have an idea. I'm going to like scare your husband. She's like, okay, yeah, I'll even give you $1,000 to do that. Yeah, it just seems kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the night of September 1st, she drove Weldon to the scene and waited in the car. So after the shooting, Weldon came back and told her that he had to shoot him because he felt that his life was in danger. And she ends up being charged with conspiracy to commit murder.
Did she explain at all the phone call and why that?
That was basically just to get Greg to come there.
So she admitted that that was,
yeah,
she did that.
Yeah, okay. They wanted to get him there so they could scare him.
To scare him.
Yeah. So at this point, they're like, okay, you paid this guy to shoot your husband. She's arrested and charged with conspiracy.
Yeah.
Because, So their next step is to find Weldon. So they end up finding this guy and they bring him in for questioning. And he tells them, well, the night that happened, I was at home. You know, I was at home all night. I don't know what you're talking about. So they're like, well, give us your cell phone so that we can prove that you were at home.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, we'll be able to see what towers your cell phone was bouncing off of and everything. And he refuses. And he's like getting all weird and being like, yeah, you guys are accusing me of this and that's not right. So then they ask him, is there any reason why we might find your DNA at the scene? And then he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, you know.
Frozen Mexican dinner. Okay, there's this SNL. I have a really funny video that I showed Alexi last night, and it's not related. Well, it kind of is related.
It kind of is related.
It's a spoof on a pharmaceutical thing, and it's I won't say anything other than it's.
But
like,
it's funny.
On YouTube, look up SNL Frozen Mexican Dinner, and you'll get.
It's very funny. So he tells the police, he's like, yeah, so I went for a run the other night. And he's like, as I was running, you know, I had to like drop a deuce
and,
you know, so I just like went ahead and pooped in the woods. And then they're like, well, you know, did you use a towel or anything to like wipe yourself? And he's like, yeah, I did. And they're like, well, where did that towel come from? And he's like, well, I just found it there.
Oh, can you imagine?
No.
What wonderful luck. It's a creepy.
Things just kept getting better. Yeah. So they're like, okay. So now you admit to being there. She admits to being there. So they end up getting a warrant to search his house, and they end up finding the gun hidden in the rafters of his home.
Everything's there.
And he's arrested.
Yep.
So,
what a crazy story.
I know. So they start to put the case together and they're trying to figure out like why did she do this?
Yeah.
And they figured out their best like reason for this was that it was the financial motive of her not wanting to have to pay him $120,000, and also the fact that she wanted full custody of their son, and if obviously if he was dead, she would
plenty of motive.
Yeah, so tons of motive. So their trial starts in October of 2017, and both Diana and Weldon stick to their stories that they were not trying to kill Greg. They were just going there to scare him. And of course, at this point, the DNA has come back and linking the poop to Weldon.
Angry turds.
Angry turds. That's good. Linking the angry turds to Weldon McDavid Jr. So at the trial, Greg testifies. So at this point, he's like totally healed. He's fine.
Awesome.
Yeah. So he made a full recovery. He now obviously has full custody of the son, you know. And he basically gives an account of, you know, everything that happened and what happened that night. And then Diana's aunt testifies, and she tells the court that on Christmas Day, the Christmas before this happened, so this is like almost a year before,
December, yeah.
That Diana, they were together at Christmas, and Diana took the aunt aside and said, "I need you to help me kill Greg."
What?
Yeah, she asked her aunt, like, "Can you find somebody to help kill him?" And the aunt was like, "No," but then she didn't ever report this. So.
Oh, wow.
Maybe she thought she was joking.
Would have been helpful to know.
Maybe she thought she had like a little too much Christmas punch and was just kind of like saying weird stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow.
But once the aunt testified and said that, they were like, wow, this was totally premeditated.
Yep.
This was, you know, a year or more in the making.
Yeah.
So.
Let me guess. Diana went to jail for 2 years.
No, actually.
Okay.
That's an
usually in the modern
guess.
Day when people murder people, they go to jail for between 1 and 2 years.
Right. I guess it depends on where you live.
Totally.
Too.
Yeah.
So they are both found guilty.
Okay.
And it's kind of funny, when the guilty verdict was announced, Diana passed out in the court. She just like fainted in her chair.
Right.
And I saw a video of it and it just looks so fake.
Yep, phony.
Just like, you know, I've never been convicted of murder. I mean, I've never committed murder, but I'm assuming that if, you know, that's announced that you're guilty of murder, it's probably a shock to the system.
Sure.
But it's like, yeah, it just seemed very fake. Hmm. Anyway, so in January of 2018, they are sentenced, and Weldon McDavid receives a sentence of 50 years to life for attempted murder, and Diana gets a sentence of 26 years to life for conspiracy and attempted murder.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're both currently trying to appeal their sentences,
yeah,
but they are both in prison at this point.
The world's just a little bit safer.
Yep. There's no, you know, they're not out.
Pooping in the woods. Do you think he was just hanging out there for a long time waiting for them, and he got like frozen Mexican dinner going through his system or something?
I mean, probably, but it's like, how stupid.
Well, yeah.
You're going to leave a big pile of your DNA?
Yeah. He must have been very confident that ever find him. But
yeah, you just had like the explosive D.
Yeah.
And just couldn't.
And it's always surprising how often someone who has committed a crime does not come up with a good explanation.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that you know that they've had so much time to think about hypotheticals.
Like, why are you thinking, okay, if I get caught, what am I going to say? The best
thing you could come up with is that we were going to scare him.
Right.
Like, that's just asking to get arrested.
And the other thing that always,
not that I can think of a better reason, but I mean, I haven't killed anyone, so I don't have to. But yeah, it's a surprisingly bad alibi or like explanation, considering the fact that like her mind was probably consumed with like, how do I explain this?
I mean, how could you do that and then like just not think about it anymore?
Right.
And the other thing too is like, how many people involve in these things?
Yeah.
Like, telling all these people that you want to kill
your
husband. And
well,
like,
yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, she wasn't quite right with, even from the Munchausen tendency kind of thing. But
yeah.
Nice silver lining that he lived.
Yeah.
Our crimes don't always end with the victim living, so this is nice.
So
this
he lived, he, you know, has the son.
Raised the son, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. So, and I'm sure the son is much better off now.
Yes.
So yeah.
Wow. Awesome story. Thank you for preparing all that. And this has been episode 15 of Coffee with Crime. I want to mention again before we leave, we have ordered a coffee from Honduras, from Cova Coffee. It's phenomenal. I do want to say that it is whole bean, and we have a grinder here in the studio, so if the winner does not have a grinder, then we can custom grind it for whatever kind of device that they use to roast, to brew their coffee. But yes, if you would like to win a free bag of super, super
really
high-end coffee, please email us, email me. I'm representing the podcast right now at lewiskundsen. @gmail.com mm-hmm. and say, hey, I invited I sent a link of this podcast to my friend. It's super easy to send links to.
Or you can tag them on Instagram.
Yeah, Facebook or an Instagram.
I've been kind of bad about updating our Instagram.
Yes,
I think I'm behind like 3 weeks.
We'll
so
I'll
do that, and then you'll be able to tag your...
But yeah, I mean, the way that we distribute our podcast is through anchor.fm, mm-hmm. and whenever I post the link on Facebook, I always post that link. It's usually not the Spotify link or the whatever podcast app.
Right.
It's the Anchor, which you can actually listen to the podcast straight from Anchor, which is cool, because if you don't want to get involved in, if you don't want to pay for Spotify or Apple Music or whatever, you can just listen to it for free there. So it's a really neat site for that. And so, yeah, just send that link, and that link will enable your friend, however they listen to podcasts, to listen to this episode. And yeah, either email or Facebook or Instagram and invite a friend, and your name will be entered, and we will draw names from a hat in a very fair manner. for the next episode, and we will find our winner. So thank you to again to Kova Coffee for sending us some stuff and just being awesome people overall. And thank you, Alexi, for the crime today. And thank you all for listening. And thank my hair for looking apparently so good.
It looks so good.
Have a great week, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
And we'll take our coffee
with crime.